We're going to have a good show today. Welcome to episode 3,880 of the Survival Podcast titled Guns, Bitcoin, Griddles, and Business. And that's only a part of what we're going to discuss today. I've got a great roundup for you guys today. Here's what we're going to be talking about. Kel-Tec, the guys over at Kel-Tec, this year they seem to be doing more of the do drugs while you develop new guns, which I think is actually kind of fun, some of the stuff they come up with. They have a new gun. Relatively new. It's been around a while, actually, but this year I think it's new. The Nub Sub, if you're familiar with the Sub 2K, it's kind of in that same family, like a Gen 3 Kel-Tec Sub 2K. But this is a really little one, but I'm going to talk about it today and some of the really cool marketing that goes with it. Is it worth owning, though? Is it really? Or is it just one of those, like, I want it because it looks cool. It looks like something somebody would use in a movie. And we're talking about a little movie they did. And making fun of the ATF, which is it was always worth doing. But I think I might start adding this on like Thursday variety shows, just like some newer gun or newer option or something. Even maybe I'm considering adding to my collection. I will break the tension on whether Jack's going to be buying one of these. Probably not. And I am a Gen 1 Sub 2K owner. I mean, I jumped on the Sub 2K bandwagon long ago. I'll tell you why. Maybe this thing isn't right for everyone. But why? Maybe it's right for you. It's up to you. Then Trump did something useful. Of course, the media is totally upset about it. They basically filed an EO that changes the recommendations of the vaccine schedule for children and drastically reduces the number of shots a child gets. I think this is long overdue. However, if you want your kid stuck with 88 shots or whatever by the time they're 5 years old, you can still get it. Nothing here prevents anybody from doing anything that they want to with their own kids, which is why they're going hysterical anyway and acting like everybody's going to die if we were to vaccinate the way that we did in, like, say, 1982, as though people were just falling over dead in the streets in 1982. The MMR being split up, I think, is a great idea, and I'll tell you why in a moment. Also, since we're going to talk about stabby stabs and risk getting demonetized or thrown in YouTube jail or whatever, we'll also talk about – we'll go ahead and do it all in one. We'll talk about – Fauci knew the COVID shot risked miscarriages for pregnant women. And he knew this while he was telling you directly to your face on TV that it had no risk whatsoever. And this was specifically with first trimester pregnancies. And I find this really interesting because I remember as they were explaining the vaccine was coming, it wasn't even here yet. And I started looking at mRNA tech and how this vaccine would actually work and what it would actually do. I said at that time, this is like April 2020, right? I said, I can't prove it. I have no facts behind it, but I have a very deep instinct that this will be a negative impact on pregnancies and fertility. And apparently, you know, redneck duck farmers know things. And apparently sometimes even like the doctors in charge know the same thing, but they lie to you. And I'm going to talk about how don't get your hopes up. But this actually opens up a vector of attack for a state to prosecute Fauci. Remember, his pardon, you know, could be challenged by federal court. It'd be very difficult, though, as a auto pen pardon or whatever, a fake pardon. But it doesn't apply to the state of Florida or Texas or Alabama or Oklahoma or anybody else who could say, we have women who lost pregnancies because of this, and therefore we're prosecuting you for abuse of power. Now, he's still going to stand under qualified immunity. I don't know how it's going to work, but at least it's a vector of potential attack. Then BIP-110, Bitcoin is in this episode briefly. BIP-110 died in less than 3 hours, just like I said it was a couple weeks ago, right? This thing never had a chance of taking off. And what I said when I talked about this back then was what? My gut is that the people doing this that are scamming these plebs into this stupid, idiotic idea that spinning up a few thousand nodes would change the network because it can't, we're really always planning to do a shitcoin fork. Guess what the people behind 110, specifically Luke Dash Jr., are doing now? He's taking a sabbatical. Yeah, a sabbatical from his job of leading Ocean, which he nearly destroyed in all this. because that means he got fired. He got canned. And he's going to go off and work on Bitcoin projects. And his first one, a shitcoin fork. I'll tell you what to do about that if you have Bitcoin. And if you don't have Bitcoin, I promise you this segment that I do on this will be much shorter than it did a couple weeks ago. And it's good for you to know what's going on in anything that might affect the economy. And Bitcoin is now part of the economy, whether you like it or not. Then we're going to talk a little about cooking today. And I probably need to do another show on this. I haven't done one in a while on griddle cooking. I'll just do a segment today on why a griddle, a flat top griddle, something like, Blackstone, or a Camp Chef or a Vivor, any of these gas griddles are one of the best preps for outages that you can own, right? So like, the power's out, your stove doesn't work in the house, whatever it is. Like, grills are great, but we're going to talk a little bit about what you can do with a flat top griddle today. And I have an item of the day that goes in with this. And actually, I have the item of the day from yesterday, even though we didn't have a show, that goes into the next segment, kind of ties all together in cooking. And we're going to talk about some cool hacks for a chamber vacuum machine. I put out the Vivor chamber vac machine. It's on sale for about $330-something bucks again. I put that out yesterday, even though there wasn't a show, because it's a good deal. I haven't sold thousands of these, but I've sold hundreds of them. And in selling hundreds of them, I've had very few complaints. So the complaints I've had are like, they got dinged up in shipping or something. Like Vivor is in and out on quality. Some stuff's really high quality, some is acceptable quality, and some's crap. These chamber vac machines are really great, but no matter where you get it from, whether it's a VacMaster or a Vivor or an Avid Armor, there is so much more to the chamber vac machine in your kitchen. Or like me, I have an outdoor kitchen. It lives outside with a digital deck cover on it. And yes, if you get a Vivor machine, remember there's a Spearco discount. If you go through tspaz.com, you can always get discounts on anything from Vivor. You don't get discounts on Amazon, but you help support the show, and you'll find the code there. Or any write-ups on Vivor, I always include the discount code. So you get an additional 5% off by using my links and my discount code. But we're going to talk about things like marinades, compressed fruits, lacto-fermentations. Right? Yeah, you could do lacto-fermentation with a vacuum sealer. Yeah, you can. Dry canning, some sous vide stuff, and some other things. Then we're going to talk a little bit. We're shifting to entrepreneur mode. I want to tell you, I think for some people, it might even be practically mandatory to start a business in the not-so-distant future. Not everybody. But there's a lot of shift coming. As I've been saying, shift happens for a long time. And I've always said this decade we're in now would be the greatest shift, the greatest 10 years of shift in history. And about 2-3 years ago, even before we hit 2025, I kind of modified my 2020 to 2030 decade and kind of said, just slide that out to 25 to 35. And I think that's going to be a pretty damn good prediction, considering I started saying that about 2020 to 2030 all the way back in 2008. So being off by 5 years from that far back is not so bad. And I think part of what actually slowed down the shift was the COVIDs. I think that actually threw a wrinkle in the temporal prediction of the Spearco-Domus. So we'll talk about why that impacts the need to build a business. And then we're going to do some updates as we finish up today. Let's talk about the AI course that is being released at the end of the month and why you might really want to consider becoming part of that, and how you got to pre-register. You're probably not getting in. And then I'll just remind you again about the talk I'm giving at the West Virginia Homeschool Conference. I'm doing the keynote there. I've got a meetup going on. I'm sitting on a panel. Even if you don't have kids or you're not a homeschool family, this would be something really great to come to and learn about and support one of, I believe, the biggest forces for liberty that we have is the right in how we educate our children. When I was asked to speak at this by Roy Ramey, I wanted to say yes. I had to put a price on it that was worth my time to go up there, but I really cut my price to the bone as a speaker for travel and a speaker fee, because I actually wanted to say yes, right? I wanted to do this. I don't do a lot of speaking engagements, but the ability to educate your children in the manner that you see fit as a parent is a sovereign right to me, and it needs to be asserted. And that means that you have a role if you care about liberty and helping to promote it and protect it, even if it's not something you do personally. And I would even say that to parents who have their kids in public school. Public schools will be better if more people homeschool and they have to compete. Public schools will be better if there are more affordable private schools and public schools have to compete. Whenever the state has a monopoly on anything, the service level quality goes to shit. And right now in many public schools, your children are seen first as a dollar sign in a desk before they are seen as anything else, certainly not as a young person trying to grow into a productive adult. So that's what we have on the docket today. Let's start off, though, with our sponsors of the day and thanking them for help supporting the show. CanineAcademy.us, Joel Riles Operation, is sponsor of the day number one today, where you can train your dog at home and get real results. Joel has a fantastic method of training. I'm an old school dog trainer. I started training my first bird dog before I had two digits to my name or to my two digits to my age. And I fully self-trained my first bird dog the first year I was actually hunting. Like, so I got him that spring, and by that fall we had him out in the bush, and I did that all on my own. So I have a long history of training dogs. Some of you have been to my farm, and you saw the amazing dog that Charlie was before he passed away, and the amazing dog that Max was. I still learned so much from Joel. I am in awe at his ability not only to train but to teach others to train. Check out canineacademy.us. Whether you want your dog to just be a good citizen in the home, you know, and not jump on people and eat your couch, or you want to be a great homestead dog, or you want to be a livestock guardian dog or a protection dog or some blend, all of the above, it always starts with core obedience and it always starts with good training. So check out canineacademy.us to learn more on that. Next up, the Wealthsteading podcast from John Pugliano. John has been a member of this community for a very long time. When I say a long time, I first met John in 2010, right, at a prepper convention in Utah, and we have worked together ever since. He has fantastic insights on the market. What he tells you on his podcast is what he's doing with his money and his clients' money. What started out as one guy that made himself a net liquid wealth of $1 million as an investor has turned into a huge family legacy business with Investable Wealth LLC. And John shares what he's doing with his clients on his podcast. They're short, they're quick, they're to the point. You want to subscribe to this if you haven't already. Again, the wealthsteadingpodcast.com is where you can learn more about that. With that, let's start talking about some guns. I really, you know, I'm going to sound like I'm picking on Kel-Tec here a little bit. Okay. I'm not. When I talk about them doing drugs while they're making guns, there was a gun they came out with, I think it was last year, and it was kind of one of these crazy design things that they did. And somebody made a like a meme, and it was an image from the TV show, the adult animation show called Archer. And it's like their engineering guy, like their Q if it was James Bond, right? Who's like got his shirt off and he's got a big pile of cocaine and he's working on weapons while he's doing coke. I'm invoking that. And if you know anything about Kel-Tec, you know that kind of lighthearted humor there is well earned by Kel-Tec, right? Like they do some pretty crazy stuff. And this new thing that new-ish thing, because like I said, it's been out for a little while now, called the Nub Sub, is, well, it's unique. It's basically a compact 9mm pistol that folds up like a sub 2K and turns into like basically a super, super, super short SBR. And for those that are watching it, you know, it's not a stock, it's not a rifle, it's a pistol brace. And it's 9mm is the only thing it's available in. And with this short of a barrel, I don't think it really matters. I've watched some reviews of it, and it seems to be pretty damn accurate out to about 50 yards, which that's about what you're going to get out of it. There's two different configurations of it. And I really think that for this thing to not live up to its name in a different way, it might be better if people were to stick more to the Defender, which comes with an optic. But the other thing it comes with, if you look at the screen in the front, there is like a second magazine holder. It kind of looks like it's got two mags in it at the same time. The forward magazine doesn't do anything. It's just basically like a holder. But the holder that mag goes up into can act as a forward handle. And I know you don't really need a lot of recoil control or anything off of this, but this is why I found the name NubSub to be, well, perhaps a little too accurate. I want you to look at this thing again, if you're in the video, and you can look it up, either my video or just look one of these up. And I want you to look at how short that barrel is. And with SBRs, this is always a risk to people that are not experienced using them. But that forward hand, if you're a rifle shooter and you shoot rifles all the time or carbines all the time, you're generally not very worried about, you know, your fingers on your weak side hand, right? You know, if you're a right-hand shooter, you got that left hand on the forearm out there. With SBRs, there's been more than a couple people gone to the ER with the tip of a finger blown the F off. And boy, could you make that happen here. And I've watched some videos of some guys doing reviews of these on YouTube, and I seen that finger get, they didn't do it, but it got awful close to the nub sub creating a nub. I'm just saying, like, it seems to me that there is a high potential for this to happen. Now, I want to show you something. Those of you who are not on the video, I'll explain it after I play it. This is like a few minute commercial. It's like a scenario commercial of an apocalypse going on. It's 3 minutes and 7 seconds. I'm going to play like 30 seconds of it. And then those of you that miss it, I'll explain what you're about to see. And I just love this kind of shit out of Kel-Tec that they'll make a joke like this while trying to sell a product at the same time.
I'm out. Here. It's a pistol.
Right. Brace yourself for a shooting experience unlike any other.
All right, did y'all get that? Was that not fun? For those that weren't watching and maybe can't surmise what just happened, so it's these two guys. One's kind of a geeky-looking guy, and the other guy looks like a, you know, kind of a truck-driving redneck. But the geeky guy probably works for Kel-Tec or something in this scenario. And he's got a case with a couple of these nub subs in it, and him and this other dude go fight the aliens and shit in this apocalyptic, like, little fake mini-movie they made. And what you just heard there was the redneck-looking guy's out of ammo, so the other guy throws him a magazine, he loads it up, and he shoulders the brace. And, hey, remember, that's a pistol, and the guy goes off like a moron shooting it like a pistol in the middle of the zombie apocalypse. And that, I'm going to tell you guys, there are companies I like that people don't for various reasons. Kel-Tec is one of them. Do I think they make the finest engineered equipment known to man? No. Do I think that their equipment, as long as when you get a hold of it, you put it through its paces to make sure you get a lemon or something like you should anyway, is generally very, very reliable? Yeah. And do I think they make some shit that's kind of cool? Yeah. And I actually have another gun that is a lot more likely to end up in the Spearco collection than this to talk about in the future. But I also like kind of this like plucky, weird, we're going to do it because we can attitude. And I'll tell you another company I love that's similar in a way is Palmetto State Armory. And there's a lot of hate for those companies along with, and this is much more lower end, but High Point as well. Like, I don't really own any High Points anymore. The ones I had, I got rid of. But they are what they are, and they're fun. And I love that a company will go out and not take itself too seriously and make a video like that. And it also does point out the absolute absurdity of the current position of the ATF on pistol braces. Basically, the courts have said, yeah, no, that's not a stock. You got to be more clear what you mean. And they're like, well, we don't want to. And so for those who don't know, all these pistols with these braces on them, so they're actually designed so that they could, like, go over your arm. And that kind of preserves the concept of a brace. The ATF's official position right now anyway, and this can change as different bureaucrats go in and out, and that's the danger in it, is that it's a pistol unless you shoulder it, and when you shoulder it, it magically becomes an SBR. So that is what it is. But I would say that something like this with a forced reset trigger would be pretty interesting too, though I might want a little bit longer of a barrel. And if you do ever go down the rabbit hole of SBRs and things like this, you need to think about your offhand. Because again, I've seen enough evidence of people blowing fingers off their offhand that again, the nub sub may be the perfect name for this weapon, and you don't want to be the one that proves it. So let's move on from guns then. Let's cover a bunch of stuff today. So Trump just signed an executive order. This was highly pushed by Robert F. Kennedy Jr. I'm sure he had a lot of influence in it, calling for spacing out of childhood vaccines against medical groups' guidance. Of course, the AP says that. I want to say something about this here. I get labeled anti-vax all the time. I am not. I believe there are vaccines that are quite effective. And I believe there are vaccines that have saved many lives. I think there are also vaccines that have probably more risk than reward attached to them, especially for certain groups of people. And I think that we know that there are reactions to vaccines that are very severe and sometimes incapacitating to people. One of my biggest concerns has always been you bring this little child into a medical office and you pump multiple shots into them, you know, like an MMR, measles, mumps, rubella, in a single injection, plus maybe several other shots at the same time, and they have a reaction. They have a legitimate reaction, and maybe it's not even catastrophic. They get a really high fever, they end up back at the doctor's office, whatever, but then they recover and things seem pretty okay. Which one did they react to? How would you know? And I think the number is something like 88 vaccines kids are given in this country by the time they're 5 years of age. And every time anybody says anything about any of them, they're immediately attacked. And people act as if all of a sudden everybody's going to just start falling over dead everywhere. And we're going to have like, you know, pandemic squared or some shit. I was a kid in the 1980s. I went to the doctor. Before I started school, I had to get shots. I wasn't happy about it. No kid ever is. I did not see people dying everywhere in the 1970s and 1980s. It was gone. The truly highly contagious diseases that were contained by the effective vaccines for those had been pretty much quashed by then. And I know this is the purest, like, it was going away anyway. You believe whatever you want. I'm talking about what I believe today, okay? But then we have watched injection after injection after shot after shot after shot added, and then the number of boosters added skyrocket. And we have things like children that were just born being vaccinated for hepatitis that they can only get through intravenous drug use or having sex. This is not necessary, and that's one of the things that came off it. So there's a drastic reduction in the number of what are considered broadly recommended. And what that actually means in government lingo is we recommend that everybody get all of these. And a lot of the schools base their requirements, which also can be gotten around, but their initial requirements, your children have to have the stuff on the broadly recommended. So this right away just takes the pressure off parents who are not comfortable. The other thing is to split up the MMR, which, by the way, Dr. Andrew, I can't think of his last name now, had lost his license over the suggestion in a study. He's been maliciously lied about. He's the guy behind the documentary Vaxxed. He noticed a correlation with some issues in a study, and he just wrote like two sentences. This should be looked at further. And then they said he made it up and he lied. But none of the other doctors that signed off on the study faced any consequences. But the MMR, again, what he suggested was exactly what Trump's suggesting now. Split it up. Stop making one vaccine that you – like if I want the measles, mumps, or rubella, I can get them individually. And that way, if there's – I want you to think about this. Instead of getting all – Wakefield, that's it, Andrew Wakefield. There's no way around this reality. Severe vaccine reactions occur. The end. Okay. Nobody denies this. The rebuttal to it always is they're very, very rare. which is fine. It's still, it's you or your child. Okay. And then all of a sudden that doesn't really matter anymore. When you have somebody that has a reaction to something like this, the larger the amount they're given, the more severe the acute reaction and the longer it takes to recover. There is no basis to attack the idea of slowing down the vaccine schedule and then basically vaccinating people for the same illnesses. You have to be a psychopath to actually oppose that. It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense at all. So, you know, I don't get to say a lot of nice things about Trump. Not that it's, you know, my goal in life to say nice things about Trump. But I, you know, you would hope for a little bit more than we've gotten so far out of the guy. This is a good maneuver. And watch what the media will do. Every case of measles or anything anywhere that happens this year, it's all RFK's fault. It's all Trump's fault because of this change. It won't matter that anybody who becomes infected this year was under the old recommendations before it happened. Right. Like you have people like this is ridiculous. And it always goes back to what? Right. It always goes back to but we have it doesn't work unless everybody does it. If your vaccine's effective, then you get vaccinated and you're good. You don't need to worry about everybody else. And Bill said, well, it's not always 100% effective. Yep. Well, then if everybody does it, it's more effective. That doesn't work. It's the same percentages. Right. So my view is this is a good thing. And Hanging Laundry says now everything is mRNA. That is not true. Not everything is mRNA. Now, are they moving everything towards mRNA? Yeah, they are. And that's really a problem in my opinion. But no, your MMR vaccine right now is not an MMR. MMR is not an mRNA, right? That's just one example. Your DPT, which is your tetanus shot with some other bullshit added to it, it is not an mRNA. Right. These old vaccines are not all being remade into mRNA in many instances because it doesn't really make sense for them to do that. I'm glad about this one. I think it gives parents a lot more freedom to be able to say, hey, my kids have the broadly recommended ones. And it also gives parents who have doctors who are just stone-headed idiots. I don't know how you're a stone-headed idiot and a doctor, but it happens all the time, where they'll say to this doctor, look, I'm okay giving these vaccines. I just don't want to dump them all into my kid in one shot. And they're like, no, you got to do this. It's for their health. This is stupid. Parents should have the right to decide what medical treatments their children get. I don't even understand how that's controversial. That should be less controversial than men don't belong in women's sports, but that's controversial too. We're not going there today. Now, the other thing I want to talk about, though, is Dr. Fauci, who I believe will probably never face any consequences for anything he's done, and half the people of this country, if God appeared before us and told us he was a criminal, would still defend them to their own death because they're that freaking brainwashed and gaslighted. But Dr. Fauci's own text messages raised theoretical miscarriage concern after the COVID vaccine dose spark backlash. So basically, this guy wrote text messages to others in the government that are now released due to FOIA that said there really could be severe complications, right? There could be really severe complications here for pregnant women who received the vaccine while they're pregnant, and specifically in the first trimester. I don't want to try to become Scientist Spirko for you today and bore you with a long explanation. But what I will tell you is this. If you go look up how the mRNA technology in these vaccines works and the noticed or the notable side effects that the manufacturer says are common, and you think about how an embryo attaches in the lining of the uterus and how pregnancies end up in miscarriage in the first place, this shouldn't even be speculation that this is possible. The question wouldn't be, is this possible? It would be, how big will the number be? How concerned should we, is this a, you know, less than 1%, or is this a 5%? And it looks like the answer is a little bit higher than that, right? This is catastrophic. And the one thing that could, and I want to be very clear, there's times where I'm like, this is what's going to happen, right? Like the Biff 110 thing that we'll talk about in a minute, right? But then there's times like, I don't know. I'm putting the odds against this, but to me, this does open the door. You now have direct incriminating evidence in a paper trail. In Fauci's own words, he did this thing, and he knew he was lying when he did it. He used his position of authority to force the concept onto the people of the country and to jam it into the medical system to where doctors were literally afraid to buck the system. And I think we've got some amnesia about this already, about how hard it was to be a doctor that would step 1% outside of the mainstream during these years. These doctors that prescribed off-label medication, which they have been doing for as long as we've had modern doctors, as long as we've had prescription medication, we have used medicines off-label, right? These were things like inhaled corticosteroids, hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, all very safe drugs that doctors prescribe off-label all the time. Having their licenses threatened, pharmacists having their licenses threatened, pharmacists refusing to fill prescriptions by licensed physicians as though they had a right to do that to customers. And they did it. And we have forgotten very, very quickly how this was done. When you look at how that was implemented, how that was done, and the leverage and pressure that came from the federal government, specifically NIH, which was all Fauci, I think you can now go to a grand jury and make a reasonable summation. He abused his position of power. He forced recommendations that he knew might harm people. And here are people who were harmed. But then that goes to the qualified immunity. We always talk about qualified immunity and how it affects police officers. But I think we don't understand this is not just about police officers. This is about agents of the state. This is about bureaucrats in the commission of their official duties stand under this umbrella of protection called qualified immunity. So you have to try to pierce that qualified immunity. There's also a big ass opening now here, not to sue the drug makers because they're completely protected by the Vaccine Act of 1986. Thank you, Ronald Reagan, for that bullshit. But Fauci isn't. The problem is if you sue Fauci in a civil action here, it's going to go back to it's just going to be the government will have to pay the bill. That doesn't actually punish him in any way, though it could get his ass yanked in front of a jury and into a court and into depositions where they can say your pardon means nothing. And then basically the tables turn and what they did to Trump now happens to Fauci, which is the process becomes the punishment. I am generally 1,000% opposed to using process as punishment in our system. And there's a tiny little piece of me that wants to step back from that and say, even him, we shouldn't do this. This is a sacred, you know what? It happens all the time to people, and it couldn't happen to a more deserving piece of maggot shit than Anthony Fauci. If I had my way, you would see Anthony Fauci in an orange jumpsuit for the rest of his life, which probably isn't that long. And that's how he would beat the system. So I don't see this man ever spent. I don't see this guy being punished in any way other than the procedural punishment. And I say, bring it the hell on. And I hate that I have been drug off my own integrity that far. But there are people I don't care. I don't care what happens. I don't care. And in this case, any means by which we might get some justice over that prick should be explored and fully pushed. If nothing comes of it, nothing comes of it. At least it was tried. That's my opinion there. All right, moving on. Let's talk about Biff 110, right? For those that didn't catch the show where I talked about this before, Biff 110 was let's start off with what is a BIP? A BIP is a Bitcoin Improvement Protocol. These are submitted to a committee, and they go to the developmental core, and they decide if they want to implement it or not. And basically, this guy, Luke Dash Jr., he submitted this like 3 years ago because he was worried about spam on the network, and it kept evolving. And then when they opened up what's called OP return, which is a place for arbitrary data, more in a minute, he went cool, full nuclear. And this BIP-110, you know, was added to knots. And the idea was everybody was going to go out and buy like a Start9 node or whatever. And I love Start9. They're a sponsor. I own a Start9 box. I run a Start9 box. But you can't change the Bitcoin network with a freaking plug-and-play node. You can if that's individual sovereignty, you can secure your own wallet. You can manage your own wallet, your own Bitcoin. You can do all that. You can, if you're mining, you can attach your node and your wallet to your mine, but you don't have any real clout without what's called broad network support. And so what this was supposed to do was close back this place called Op Return. And what Op Return is, this basically a bucket. Think of it that way, in the blockchain. And this is a bucket where you drop in what's called arbitrary data. And this is where you might have monkey pics or dick pics or who knows what, dick butt JPEG, right? And of course, the people behind 110 were all screaming, CSAM, which is child sexual abuse material. But there hasn't been any. It doesn't exist. And if you think about it, if you encode something into Bitcoin, you have a public traceable network, and what you've encoded is there forever and can never be removed. The scum that operate in that space, that is the last effing place that they would put that type of material, because now it's traceable, trackable, and can never be undone. And therefore, it could pop back up 10 years from now and become evidence against them. This is not where these scum want to be. These are, you know, your dark web scum. They have all other ways that they do this. This is not the place that they would choose for what they do. Doesn't mean some idiot might not do it here or there. Well, what Luke's big change did is shrink down the data size that could go in that op return bucket to a very small number, from a relatively still small number, but you could put like a full picture or something like that in there. Now, the knots code, right? And they call these guys the Nazis. I ran Bitcoin knots myself. A lot of people don't know that or understand that. What knots did is it just basically filtered that shit out on your own node, which is totally acceptable, and you can do that. Because one of the cases being made for 110 was, but what if you're holding this Bitcoin and then somebody put the bad picture in there, and then you could be prosecuted for it? Well, because op return is arbitrary data, it's designed so that it can be filtered out. So if you were worried about that, all you had to do was run knots, and it wasn't on your node. It might be in the blockchain, but it's not on your node or in your possession. Right. So this is what no one on that side of the debate ever understood. The whole reason they opened up op return, because you can't get rid of spam on a data network. If all it is ones and zeros, every picture, every video, every song, every audio file, everything you listen to is just ones and zeros. That's all it is. So if you can encode it at all, you can piece it together and somebody can build a viewer for it, and you can pull up the blockchain and whatever's there, you can see or hear or whatever. Because it's just ones and zeros. So they were breaking up their spam in little pieces, which didn't do anything to prevent spam. And it actually caused more bloat of the chain because you had it in all these different places instead of one place. Right. So the idea was, we'll make it more expensive and harder to do. Well, the people that do this shit, it's not hard at all for them to do it. They were doing it before op return was open. It's only last year. We had spam back in 2012. So it didn't do anything. And it did make it more expensive, 0.04% more expensive. I bet you've never made a decision in your life economically over 0.04% expense. So that was the thing. I want to get this quick. They said they're going to launch a thing. All of us in the space said, this can't work. This is not how this works. You have to have miner support. You have to have economic node support. You have to have some of the exchanges. You don't have to have all of them, but you have to have some of them. You have to have some level of compute. You have to have something. Not your little 2% over at Ocean that turned out to be more like 0.25%. And they went ahead and did it anyway. And so everybody got together to do watch parties and live and watch the miners cave, because they were going to be brought to their knees by the plebs. And it made it about 3 minutes. But before people really started to go, we're done, was about 3 hours. And I won't even get into what happens. But what I want you to know is what happens next. The guy behind this was fired from Ocean. He said he's taking a sabbatical. This is this Luke Dash guy, right? He was canned. He was also thrown off of the committee for BIP implementation. So he was one of their, like, not core developers, but one of the people that was, like, authorized to write these improvement protocols and all. He's thrown off of that, too, because he's caused too much trouble for too long. So now he's going to take a sabbatical. He's already come out publicly and said he is redesigning Bitcoin to be the real Bitcoin, right? He's going to make it ASIC resistant so that people with regular computers like GPUs can mine, right? And he's going to, so the miners can't centralize, blah, blah, blah. He's making a shitcoin. He's making a shitcoin that's not going to have any hash power behind it. This is going to be another, you know, I guess it's going to be Bitcoin Cash, but shittier. It's going to be like Bitcoin Satoshi. It's going to be more like Fartcoin, but you mine it instead of mint it off of Ethereum. What should you do about that if you hold Bitcoin? Absolutely nothing. The same thing you did about it. Absolutely nothing. Now, if somehow they actually manage to get this thing on some exchanges or something has value, if you self-custody, you will be able to split those coins off and sell them, and I don't know if it'll be worth doing. But that'll be there if they somehow, you know, even BSV, Bitcoin Satoshi Vision, had some value to it for a while. So maybe they make a shit coin, you get some free shit coins. But for most people, you know, this is not like back when it happened in 2017, you know, where people sitting 5, 6, 7, 8 Bitcoin or something like that, or more, a lot more, and you got an equal amount of Bitcoin Cash, and then you got an equal amount of Satoshi Vision when that happened, and you could dump that shit. You know, a lot of people that are in the space now, you know, they're sitting on a quarter of a Bitcoin and they're happy about it, right? Or a half a Bitcoin, or maybe they're a whole coiner. So, you know, if you're looking at something that's worth $5 when it comes out, and you have a half a Bitcoin, it's $250, and all the bullshit you would have to go through to get your hands on it is probably not worth it. So I think it crashes and burns. You can ignore it. If anything begins to happen out of it worth looking at, I'll tell you. Also, some of you observed me on social media, and I was pretty over the top rope on people with this, and I want to explain to you why. To me, there is nothing more reprehensible than people who become strong, trusted influencers within our online communities, especially things that, you know, are health and economic and stuff related, that are true communities, not the, you know, not the chick jiggling her tits on Instagram, the Instafluencer chick, right? I don't care what she does. This is people's real money, real life, real world. And the people that were behind this, Luke, who was coding it, and some of the big names, I'm talking like Matthew Crater, right? I'm talking like HODLNOT, right? That became famous because of standing up to Craig Wright with the Bitcoin Satoshi Vision shit and Craig saying he was the real Satoshi and stuff like that, who had to go to the court a lot to defend himself. There was doxed. People like that. There's no way these people didn't know how this ended. There's no way that any of these people who have been around as long as they have, that have the knowledge that they do, ever for one effing minute honestly believe that a bunch of people plugging in plug-and-play boxes could force a change on the network. They lied to these people. They manipulated these people. They cost them time. They cost them money. And they led them down a shitty path. All I was trying to do is tell these people the truth, and they didn't want to hear it. They stuck their fingers in their ear. They call you a pedo. They go la, 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 la like children. And all I hope is that now the majority of those people, those plebs, go, wait a minute, I was lied to, and go learn the truth for themselves. And it was one of those situations, where I could not stay silent because what was being done was so wrong. Anyway, Mick says, any idea why? You have to tell me what you're talking about and maybe I'll answer it for you. But I don't know why what, why they lied. Because their plan was to launch a shitcoin. That's why, right? And I think some of them, like, they just got caught up. I think, like, Matt Crater, I don't think he's going to go along with the shitcoin. He's calling it Luke coin now, which is funny. I think he was just a grifter. I think he's always been a grifter. Whatever's trending, his life is dedicated to it. And as soon as it crashes and burns, he runs away from it. So, yeah, that's what I think. I think that people like Crater were grifters, just straight-up grifters, like, getting eyeballs. But I think most of them were all in on the shitcoin. They knew the people that were actually laying down code and things like that. The people closest to Luke, they were like, how do you do this today? in 2016, 2017, 2018, when the Fork Wars were going on, the concept had never been done before. And so it was a thing that, well, maybe it'll work. Now we know it doesn't work. So you have to create like this huge swell of anger. But then try to lead all your little children like the Pied Piper off the cliff or some shit. So anyway, let's move on. Let's talk about griddles. Griddles. I love to cook. I've done a lot of shows on cooking. You guys know that. And when I talk about cooking, you can even hear my voice and I get excited. And I have a really badass pellet smoker. I have an 8-burner Weber grill. I have a top end, like just one level down from a restaurant quality gas range in my house. I have all kinds of gadgets, some that I like really use a lot and some that I'm like, hey, I need to get rid of that. And I don't go cheap on, you know, anything that's for cooking. And the thing that I probably cook the most with is my, 6-year-old now, 36-inch 4-burner Blackstone griddle. And, you know, if you go into a restaurant and go into the kitchen, you're not going to see a Blackstone, right? They're much higher end laminate steel, heavy duty, usually electric griddles or gas griddles in those places. But you'd be surprised of how much of what you eat in restaurants is cooked on a flat top. And there's a lot of reason for it. But it's large cooking space, excellent heat transfer, great sear, and broad flexibility, right? And so to me, griddles are one of the truly adaptable and great tools to live up to my show credo, which is living a better life if times get tough. Or even if they don't. In other words, your best preps are things that you'll use even if nothing goes wrong and you'll gain by having them. That's a griddle. Now, if you have a gas range in your home, then maybe the preparatory part of this is a little less important than that because I have a gas range in my home. And if the power's out, you know, my little striker igniter thing and it all doesn't work in my stove, but a match and I've got a burner. But, you know, when your power's out and things like that, you may prefer to actually cook outside anyway, especially if it's the hot time of year. So even for me or people like me, having that ability to cook outside is great. But I wanted to just talk to you a little bit about some of the things that people, I don't think people realize you can do with a griddle. I think people, yes, they're like, okay, I can make a burger, right? Or I can saute a bunch of vegetables. And you know, that's kind of about it. Or I could do like a big stir fry or make eggs and pancake and bacon or whatever. Like typical things like short order cook stuff. And yeah, you can do a ton of stuff like that. But there's a lot of other things that you can do beyond that. And I've got an item of the day today I'm going to pull up early here in the middle of the show instead of wait to the end like I usually do because it fits this topic of discussion. This is made by a company called Joyfare, and I'm going to tell you right now, I don't care about the brand at all. This just happens to be the brand that I have. Lots of people make these. This is about 9x13 by about 4 inches tall cover. And so what you're able to do with that then is have something on your griddle that you want to trap more heat around, and you can put it over top of that. So this is another one. Everybody knows about these things. A lot of them are round and much smaller. But generally what they're used for is melting cheese on a burger or like a chicken breast or something you're making a sandwich out of. And then like the chef trick is you put the cheese on the burger or the chicken breast or whatever it is. And you put about 1/2 ounce of water on the griddle and you throw the cover on it and that steam instantly melts that cheese. And it's good for that. Then the other thing that they get used for a lot is if griddles are actually a fantastic way to make a great steak. You just get a beautiful freaking sear with a flat top griddle. You can get a lot of power, a lot of heat into a hot top a griddle, and it has the ability to hold that heat. So when you lay that cold piece of meat down, it doesn't immediately drop the temperature much, so you get that great sear. But if you're like me, you know, like I buy my own rib primals, and when I cut a ribeye, I cut that shit like 1 to 1.25 inches thick. If you just put that on a griddle and try to finish it just on the griddle, it'll often be, even if you eat it very rare, which I do, before you really get it finished cooking, like you're burning the shit out of it. So you can put it over thicker cuts that need to have some heat retention. Another thing that these guys have is a little vent on the lid that you can either close all the way, open partially, or open more to let more vent out, so you can control your heat and your moisture and things like that as well. So these are pretty good. Now, I want to talk to you about like some other things you can do, though, once you have a griddle, especially if you have these covers. Last night, well, let me pull that back up real quick for those of you on the video anyway. Last night, I made clams on a griddle, like little neck clams. And no, I didn't throw them on the griddle. I actually just put them in a aluminum throwaway style pan. And before I did that, I put about 2 cups of white wine in that pan. I took a head of garlic, cut it in half, threw the whole thing in there. Threw some onion powder in there, some Old Bay, some green cardamom palms, some pink peppercorns, some thyme, and some rosemary. And I just threw that in, and then like a stick of butter, half a stick of butter. I put that on the flat top until I got it boiling, right? Melted the butter and got it boiling. But this is the magic of those dome covers. They fit the half-size foil throwaway pans perfectly, like a lid. So I was able to cover that and steam those clams. And then I ate bread, and I'm not sorry. I got some really nice sourdough, and I threw that on the griddle, and I gave it a little bit of a toast, and I dipped it in that, and that was one of the best things I've ever eaten in my life. And to be able to do something like that with a flat top, and there's a lot of other ways to play on that. So another option is I do kind of like when I have friends over, I'll make like two of them, so because you make a lot. I'll do kind of like an Americanized no rice paella, where I'll get some Spanish chorizo and I'll put a little bit of a sear on that. And I'll throw that in there, and I stick with the, like, it's not really a paella because I stick with the wine and the garlic and all of that going into the pans. And I'll get things like some big scallops, and I'll sear them and I'll set them aside because you don't want those to overcook and turn a rubber ball, right? And I'll do the same thing with some shrimp. I'll throw like mussels and clams and the chopped up sausage and whatever else I want into that kind of like almost like a bake and put the lids on them. And then I'll throw the shrimp, get a little bit of some color on them on the griddle. And then like when it's almost done, the shrimp go in and get warmed back through. And then right at the end, you throw the scallops in. I've done crab legs in those. I have done crawfish in there. I have done, if you can think of it, I've probably stuck it in there. I've done like chunked up rabbit because rabbit's very common. And yeah, I'll throw in the saffron. They give the broth the color and the flavor and all. I just don't usually do rice. And so like, what else can you come up with, right? Okay, let's stick with the dome covers. So you get that dome cover. And you want to make breakfast, right? You're going to make your family like bacon and eggs and stuff for breakfast, some sausage patties. You know what's good with that? I know we're supposed to be carnivore and all, but hey, I cater to what you guys do, not just what I do, right? Biscuits, like even the freezer biscuits or the pop-open tin biscuits. You can make biscuits on a flat top. You can make bread on a flat top. The problem is if you put them straight on the flat top, the bottom will burn. So what you do is you get a little metal trivet. All you have to do is get one just small enough to fit inside the dome cover. You put that on the flat top, and then it makes a lot of sense actually to lay down like a double layer of aluminum foil on top of the trivet. You put your biscuits, maybe add a little bit of a cooking spray, or I just use some butter on top of those, and then you put the dome cover on and open your vent. Just check on them until they're done. And now the only thing I wouldn't try to do on there is maybe gravy, because it's kind of a mess if you were to do that. I don't mean directly on the grill. I mean even in like one of those pans or something. Like gravy, if you do it right, you make your own roux and all, it's probably not the way to go. But you could certainly, if you already had pre-made gravy, throw a throwaway pan on there and heat it up. There's almost nothing you can't do with a flat top. So now that we're talking about food, let's move on and talk about some cool uses for a chamber vac machine. And this is I brought these around like 2 years ago when I first started working with Vavor. And as I said earlier, Vavor has some really high quality shit and some stuff that's okay. And then it has some garbage. This is high quality. I own a VacMaster that now sells for like, I'll have to look here because I know it's on the write up. I think it was like $1,300 when I bought it. $1,300 bucks is what they run now. So it was probably like $1,100 when I bought it. So I own this again, VacMaster 230. $1,300. This sealer made by Vavor is $330 right, $336. Again, I haven't sold thousands of these, but I've sold hundreds of them. The complaints have been something like, when I got it, one of the screws was missing for the cover on the bottom or something, like a little piece of sheet metal screw or something. You could just stick one in there, or you really don't even need it. I haven't had anybody say I got one DOA or something like that. So these have been great. I got one myself, and I put it through about 6 months of use. And I have to say it did everything as well as my VacMaster did as far as the quality. I don't need two. They're pretty big, heavy machines. So I actually gave this away to a workshop attendee about a year ago, I guess, 2 years ago. And but it's a great machine. And again, vacuum sealers are another one of these things. They're great for preppers. And they're just great for people that, you know, like to save money and buy a lot, you know, bulk food and store it more effectively. I'm going to tell you that everybody I know who's ever had like a vacuum sealer, the cheapo ones you can buy for $50 or less, has always complained about failures in their bags. And that's because if the least little bit of moisture gets where that seal is, which is really hard to avoid if there's any moisture on the food, then when you're using it, that seal is doomed to fail. And then the other thing is, okay, now you're putting this shit in these bags, and these bags are very expensive because they have to be specially designed with grooves on one side to allow the air to come out of the bag. The chamber vac bags cost, the best chamber vac bags cost about half, like the middle of the road, cheapest you're willing to buy, common vacuum sealer bags. So the bag cost alone will pay the difference in the cost of the machine at this price pretty quick. But it's a better result, and it's got a lot more flexibility. You're able to set things like how long the vacuum pump pulls to determine how much vacuum you really want to pull, how long the seal is heated so that a thicker bag will seal better, and a bunch of other settings. So I really recommend this, but let's talk about some things you can do with a chamber vacuum machine that people I don't think are aware of. So the one that you're most likely to know about is marinades. So if you think about what a marinade is, we're talking about a wet marinade here, not a dry rub. Though this works with dry rubs and salt-based, the equilibrium things as well. In fact, I do my equilibrium cured homemade bacon using a vac sealer like this. But quick marinades, when you take, you make a liquid marinade and you put it on your let's say your steak, your roast, whatever, your chicken, whatever that is. And generally you put that in a bag and you put it in a refrigerator overnight. And you're not just, like, it's not a sauce, right? You want some penetration into the meat, into the fibers of the meat. Well, when you put a marinade in the bag and you put the food in the bag with the marinade and then you vacuum seal it, you pull all the air out, you compress the food and you pull the marinade into the meat when you vacuum seal it. So you can do a very quick marinade, like 15 minutes after you've sealed it and put it in the, throw it in the refrigerator and let it sit. 15 minutes is kind of almost like doing it overnight. And there's nothing that stops you from doing this and still doing it overnight. But in a lot of instances, what this will let you do is kind of last minute decide, hey, I should have marinated that. Well, let's go do it now. And that could be anything from a really deep, flavorful marinade to a simple salt, sugar marinade for a chicken, right? Or maybe a little bit of flavorings and spices, but you're more worried about just the juiciness of the chicken. And again, I am not big on the whole just vacuum seal it, it's marinated, and you're done. But it definitely drastically speeds it up. But it also does that for pickling. So like with appetizers and things where you want to put these little accoutrements that are pickled and whatever on them, a lot of times I think people feel that pickling is really kind of a pain in the ass and there's a lot that you have to do and all. I've done quick pickles with a vacuum sealer. They're this simple. Like I do sherry vinegar pickled sliced celery. It's a fantastic little hit of acid to use with certain things. And basically all you do is you take a couple stalks of celery and thin slice them on the bias, throw them in a vacuum seal bag, and put about 1/4 sherry vinegar in to 3/4 water and some salt. Then you vacuum seal that and toss it in the fridge for about an hour. while you're doing your other, and it's just there. And then you can transfer it to a jar and you can keep it pretty long term that way. So there's other things like that you can do. But here's a cool one. How about compressed fruit? When you compress fruit and you change the texture, everything changes. One of the cool things you can do, just no additions whatsoever. Slice some watermelon up. And if you have a chamber vac, try this. Slice some cold watermelon up, put it in your chamber vac bag, run the cycle, compress it. Okay. Cut your bag open, do it again, and throw it in the refrigerator. You give it two cycles, right? And do a long, like full vacuum, spacesuit level vacuum, right? Throw it in the refrigerator for about an hour, cut it open, eat it. The entire experience changes. You can do this with a lot of different fruits, but watermelon is one of the most dramatic changes because it forces it down into those cubes and it changes the texture. It actually eats differently. But then you can play with things like throw a little liquor on that, right? I did one year, I did watermelon, and like for those of you that don't drink, you wouldn't do this at all. But those are like, you don't want to drink a lot. I'm not talking about being ridiculous here. I'm talking about like a bag of watermelon and like an ounce to an ounce and a half of Grand Marnier. And just pour it in the bag over the watermelon and do that. And it's like a dessert. And you'd have to eat an awful lot of that before you were intoxicated. I've seen people do honeydew melon with Midori liquor. I saw a guy do, it belonged in a Michelin star restaurant, the dessert he did. It was that plus like a lime sorbet and some other things that he did. It was really, really cool. So you can play with the compressed fruits and veggies, right? So one thing you can do is a vegetable you're going to put on something like as a garnish that you want to be really crispy, like think daikon radish or thin sliced cucumber or whatever. You take that and you put it in the bag, single layer, pour ice water as cold as you can get into there and run a vacuum cycle and then just use it. It pulls that cold water in and it compresses those vegetables and it makes them crisp in a way that's hard to explain. But if you're going to cook them, you can add flavors and you don't have to worry about thin slice or anything then. And doing that with vegetables, can you actually infuse flavors into vegetables? Is another thing you can do with them. Dry canning is actually really super simple. Most of them, like the one that I just showed you and the one I own, a ball jar will not sit in there standing up. But like both of the ones I showed you, or the one I own and the one I showed you, you can fit 2-quart ball jars side by side laying on their side in there. But you put your dry goods in there. Like right now I'm doing a lot of dehydrating of mushrooms, so I'm growing a lot of mushrooms. And so you put that jar, you fill it with your dry goods, you put your little disc on top. You take your ring and you tighten it down until it stops and you back it off about, you know, just a hair. You lay it down in there and you run the cycle. And when the vacuum chamber releases, that jar seals up and now you've got a dry canner. And I know you can use an adapter with like whatever the one everybody buys is or whatever, the super cheapos, but you don't need anything else. You just throw it in there and it's done. It's also good for lactofermentations. This is a new one for me. And I was like, but what happens is your CO2 increases. But what you do is you use a much larger bag than you need for the lactoferment. So there's room for that to happen. So you end up with a true zero oxygen environment for your lactoferments. I haven't tried this one yet, so you might want to look it up if you give it a shot. I'd love to hear from anybody that does their lactoferments using a chamber vac machine. I'd be love to hear about that. Then if you like sous vide cooking, you know, there's nothing more frustrating than you go to put your sous vide steak in your sous vide circulator and it's floating because it does still have some air in it. Or you put it in your little cheapo vacuum sealer and it fails. It's just a pain in the ass. You don't have that problem here. But what I love about this is since you can do wet foods, let me explain real quick why a chamber vac will do a wet marinade and a vacuum sealer won't. When you use, God, I wish I could remember, what is the vacuum frickin' sealer that everybody buys? The cheap-ass one. FoodSaver. FoodSaver is what it's called, right? When you use a FoodSaver-style machine like that, when you start you're vacuuming out the air, and then you're sealing it, right? Which seems to make sense. And like I said, those bags have little grooves, because if they didn't, when the bag closed around the food, there'd be no way for the air to get out. So it's pulling air out of the bag, but not anyplace else, only out of the bag. And so if there's any moisture, and you think you've like gotten something as dry as possible, you put it in the bottom of that vacuum bag, and as you're doing the sealing, you can see those little beads of moisture. You're like, come on. It's like a horse race, and you want your machine to seal before that drop gets there, right? And so that's how that works. When you use a chamber vacuum, the entire chamber evacuates. So you got the kind of this bubble lid and this space you put the food in the bag in. And when you're running the machine, the bag is wide open basically. And it's not visually, but it is. Like air can get out of the bag no problem. It doesn't need the special little things. But that whole chamber goes completely to a vacuum. And so at that point, there's no air in the bag or around the bag. So the moisture pretty much just sits there. It doesn't go anywhere because all the air evacuated uniformly. The pressure's the same. There's no suction against the inside of the bag. Yeah. And so then the seal goes off. And then it looks like it's not even sealed. And when the vacuum releases, the bag collapses around the food. It's really cool. So that gives you those perfect seals. And then one of the great things, because you can do the liquids, is if you have a certain base or something that you like to cook, marinate your food in, and then you like to sous vide, right, and then take out and sear, you can put, right, no videos, you just live stream. This must be a new person. If you're new here, mid-rangerous, this is a podcast. And, yes, we do bring up some supporting images from time to time, but this is a talk show. So, yeah, I'm glad you're here. Please stick around. You might enjoy us. But if you're going to do that with sous vide, you can put those liquid marinades, liquid base in the bag, dry seasonings as well, vacuum seal individual portions, throw that shit in the freezer, and have it labeled. And you decide, I want to cook two pork chops tonight or two steaks tonight. You pull them out. You throw them right in the sous vide, frozen. Within 15 minutes, they're defrosted, and your actual cook time starts. And so you have this ability that when you forgot to take food out or anything, hey, I'm going to go grab two of the garlic butter steaks or whatever it is that you have put away like that. And that's a lot more difficult to do with like a food saver, because you're going to get that pull again of that wet material, and it just doesn't really work very well. And then the last one would be like short-term preservation, which is something I don't think people think about. Like, I love guacamole, and I like to make guacamole when I have people over and stuff like that. And so what happens often is I have to make that guacamole like last minute when my guests are getting there, because even with lemon juice and all, guacamole turns brown. All right. Now I'm going to give you a second hack that's going to blow your mind in a second here, but I just don't always have time to do this. What I'll do, I'll make a bowl of guacamole, right? I'll put some lime juice in it and on it to help with the oxidation problem. But I'll take the whole bowl and I'll shove it inside a vacuum seal bag, put it in the chamber vac, process it, throw that in the refrigerator, and it ain't going to get brown that day. You pulled the air out, so there's nothing to oxidize with. And by the way, leaving the pits in there from your avocados helps with reducing that oxidation as well. I'm not sure what the chemical process is. I said I'd give you something that blows your mind. We're off the chamber vac now. We're over to sous vide. And I don't remember the temperature exactly. You'll have to look it up. You can ask AI and it'll tell you, I'm sure. You could take your sous vide circulator or whatever, you know, whether you use a pot, or I have like a Lexan proper thing for sous vide. You could throw avocados straight in the water, whole, not cut, and run, I think it's like 120 degrees for like 40 minutes or something like that, whatever it is. There's an enzyme in avocado that causes it to turn that brown, black, shitty color. And if you hold this temperature of the avocado for a certain amount of time, it doesn't change the texture, flavor, or anything of the avocado. It still eats beautifully. But it deactivates that enzyme, and you have non-turning black guacamole. I've always thought that was a really cool hack. I've only done it a couple times, but it's just a good thing to know. All right, so let's move on from there, and let's talk about businesses. I told you get variety from me today. So I actually think, and this is about what is your career path, what is your age, what do you want out of life, what do you not want out of life? The same thing it always was with owning a business. These type of questions need to be answered. But I think with the flux of this decade, again, 2025 to 2035, and the advent of AI, there's been a time in the past where if you answered those questions a certain way, it was probably a really good idea to at least consider a business. If you really mean your answers now, it may almost become mandatory that you build some sort of an entrepreneurial activity of your own if you want to have your life the way that you want it. The disruption that is coming, right? The disruption that is coming very soon or is actually ongoing is difficult to comprehend. AI is not going to take all your jobs, right? AI is not going to take all your jobs, but it is going to take a lot of jobs. But I think what's going to take even more jobs is a harsh reality, right? A harsh reality setting in right now that we have been living in a fantasy land for a very, very, very long time. And I've talked about this before. Most large to jumbo sized companies, I'm going to say large, medium sized companies. So I'm talking companies with more than 500 people up to companies with 50,000 people have a significant body count of human beings that work there that are unnecessary for the business that do business. If you just got rid of them and you didn't hire anybody else, they might do a thing or two here and there that moves a piece of paper along or something like that. Or they now people have to answer their own phone instead of having a receptionist do it for the whole place or whatever it is. But if you got rid of them, nothing would really happen. No customers would ever know. And the more that company is in the tech sector, it's probably the more that that's true. Elon Musk, love him or hate him, I don't care. It doesn't change my point here. Elon Musk bought Twitter, changed it to X, and got rid of 70% of the people that worked for Twitter. Gone. He didn't replace them. Like you're woke, so you're gone. I'm putting a base person in. No, they just went. What they had the office space moment for real. What is it that what you would say that you do here? And when the answer was out, get out, right? They had these people that were, you know, doing yoga and eating free salad bars all day and drinking yogurt on the roof and shit. And they got rid of, and nothing happened. I'm not saying that every company out there, you get rid of 70% of the workforce and that it's that bad that you could do that. I am saying that I would have a hard time believing you could put me in any company with greater than 500 personnel where I couldn't immediately identify 10% of the people who don't need to be there. If I was your consultant and walked in and spent 1 week, I'd be like, 500 people, that's 50. Here's a list of 50 names. Get rid of these people. And when they say, what do we do next? Don't do shit except tell everybody you have to pull up the Slack now. And they will. And you'd actually find there'd be a lot of people in that company that would actually work harder happily because you guys tell me right now, how many of you have worked at a place where there's freaking slackers and they get away with it and you're a hardworking person and it is the most demotivating thing for you, right? Because you're here busting your ass and this person over here is late all the time. They never get their shit done. Everybody's pulling up their weight for them all the time. Or they're there and you look at them and you go, I don't even know what you do. Like, they go on vacation. Nobody even notices except the seat's empty, those people, right? When you get rid of those people, then the people that want to work hard work harder. This has always been the case. Like, the worst thing you can do for retention is hold on to shitty people because good people don't want to work with shitty people. And I'm telling you, minimum 10%. And if I went in and you said, now find me another 10%, another 50 out of that 500, but use a scalpel this time. Be a little bit more careful about who, why, what, and when, and have a recommendation of how to replace them. I can do that too. 500 on up, I could do it over and so could most people that have an eye for business. Okay. What does that mean? That means you're going to have a lot of people that don't have jobs soon. And a lot of the supposed AI layoffs, when you peel back the cover and you look at what's really going on, they're not AI layoffs at all. They're a mixture of things. They're one company's doing what I just said, and they're shit like Amazon pulled. They lay off 14,000 people, right? This happened this year. They lay off 14,000 people, 14,475 or something like that, right? And Of course, they have to put out a press, it's a publicly traded company. That's big. Is there a profit concern or whatever? Of course, the company comes out and says what? AI has made us so much more effective that we just don't need these people. And it's a shame. And we're going to do what we can to help them with finding a new career, but we don't need them. Right. And these weren't warehouse workers. Right. These were freaking blue collar workers. I'm sorry, white collar workers, tech workers, et cetera. And then, people looked at it and went, what's AI doing that these people like what's the implementation or whatever? And a few weeks into it, Jeff Bezos ends up on an interview with a journalist who actually does their freaking job, who pushes on that and says, this doesn't seem. And he goes, well, I don't really want an AI. It was right sizing. So you got rid of people because you said you didn't need them. What happened 2 weeks later? Does anybody remember? I did talk about this when it happened. What did Amazon do almost exactly 2 weeks after Jeff Bezos' interview said, no, we didn't really get rid of them because of AI? Huh? Anybody out there know? I don't know how far ahead of you guys I am. H-1Bs. Almost the exact same number that they let go, they brought in H-1Bs. Nick got it, but he put H-1N1. A fluclade, right? I think he meant H-1Bs, and maybe he was just typing too fast, right? But yeah, so they just literally replaced them. And so the other thing that's going on is right-sizing being an excuse. So they're laying off 5,000 when they really probably should lay off 4,000, using AI as cover or right-sizing as cover or both, and then bringing in 1,000 H-1Bs because they basically overcompensate and cut costs at the same time. This shit's going to continue. So there's a lot of places right now where headcount's going to go down, even indirectly related to AI and other technologies and things like that that are being implemented. So we have to start thinking a little bit differently. And I think America, we have some real problems. Don't take this like the golden era is coming back, whatever. But in some ways, we may have to go back a little bit more to our roots of what this country was traditionally. This was a country of farmers. And this is something people don't understand about farmers. Farmers are not just people that plow a field, put a bunch of corn in the ground, and sit around and watch it grow. Farmers have always been and continue to be entrepreneurs and not just that grow and sell food. Farmers are always the kind of people that run multiple income streams. Even when I was a kid, all the way back in 1970s and 80s, right? Like Pennsylvania, like there were corn farmers that when they harvested their field, they might have like 500 acres and they'd leave 4 acres standing because they could put a corn maze in for the fall and Halloween and all that shit. And they could make more money with that corn maze than they could from the 3 or 4 acres of bushels of corn that would have came out of it. That's the kind of thing I have never met a farmer that didn't have other things going on. Like, always had other things going on. So this country's roots are the roots of individuals owning their own means of production, right? Exact opposite of communism. So the people own the means of production, which doesn't mean anything except we want to steal all your shit. But individuals owning their own means of production and their own means of revenue. And I think we're heading to a place where if you really want to have anything, free, any kind of freedom anymore, this is the kind of thing that you're going to have to do. And Hanging Laundry says, sucks, heard Texas is flooded. If you mean with H-1Bs, we are. And you don't really see it day to day unless you work in a space that has a lot of people in on H-1Bs. But when you go to big seasonal events or anything like that, like we went to a big Christmas thing out in a place called Grapevine last Christmas. And I'm going to tell you, 15 to 20% of people walking around were Indian or Pakistani. I don't have a problem with Indians or Pakistani people. I don't blame them for wanting to come here. If I lived in India, I'd want to come here too. And they are technically coming in legally, but they're doing it at the expense of the American workers force. If you try to make a case to me that we actually need these people because we don't have Americans who can do the job, I'm sorry, I can prove you wrong easily enough. I covered this probably 2 years ago. There's a website, though, where you can look up all the companies that currently have advertisements for jobs available for people to come in on H-1Bs. And you can't tell me that we need like genius programmer coder Indians to do these jobs because their jobs like administrative assistant to a college. And that college has 40,000 students. You really don't think one of those students wants a freaking part-time job as administrative assistant for 30 grand a year? That's what you need an H-1B for? Bullshit. Bullshit. Absolute bullshit. And somebody here, you misspelled fascists when you put capitalists, right? Don't think you're going to get any leeway with your socialist bullshit here with this group of people. We're not here for your socialist bullshit. I'm sorry. Okay. What we have going on in this country is not capitalism. Capitalism is a level playing field for people to compete. And when people fail, they fail. And that's good. Market pressure and competition makes everybody better. Fascism is a form of socialism that is designed to look like capitalism that uses artificial controls like a visa system rigged against the American worker for the purpose of enriching the elite through the cotillion effect. Okay? That's where you live. That's what you're in right now. This country has been a fascist system economically partially since 1913, but 100% since 1971, and we got 80% there in the 1930s. While we had young men drafted into our military fighting the Nazis to stop fascism in World War II, we were going full fascist with our economy right here. And we're seeing the net effect of it now cumulative across, you know, what, 80, 100 years. That's what you're seeing right now. This is the end of being able to run this system this way. And what they're trying to do now, this is what Trump's trying to do with the Mar-a-Lago Accords, isn't fix it. It's reboot it and do it all over again. Trump's trying to be Reagan. Trump's trying to be Reagan. Reagan devalued the dollar. That made the debt less impactful. And it sent us on Bush Senior was an adult, right? No new taxes, and then there were new taxes. So Clinton took over. But those Clinton years of expansion, those Clinton years and those Bush Junior years, all the way up until 08 when everything fell to shit apart, which I told you about before it happened. Remember that? Get out, get out, get out. Remember that? That was Jack Spirico in June of 2008. July of 2008, telling you with the stock market, August 2008, get out now, do it now, right? That economic expansion that eventually, that all started with Reagan devaluing the money. Trump seems to think he can do it faster, quicker, and get the results in 2 years, which is just impossible to do. But that's what he's trying to do. It's a madman Hail Mary to try to save basically an empire that is beginning to collapse around its edges right now. This freaking economic system we built makes no sense. It makes no sense. It could theoretically make sense with extreme discipline, which we do not have in government, never will. So that's why I talk so much about Bitcoin, and I also talk about real estate, and I also talk about gold and silver, and I also talk about business. Right? So I'm just saying, really think about whether or not you want a business. Now, if you want a business or you already have a business and you want to expand it, I want to remind you guys that we do have another round of our AI for Solopreneurs course about to drop. You have a couple weeks left to pre-register for this course. You can go to the link in the show notes today. If you go by the website after the live stream's over, or you can just go to jackslaws.com right now. Click on courses, click on the GPT course, and then pre-register. What will happen is you go to an email list. That email list has a single purpose only, and that is to remind you a couple times leading up to launch day. And then when we launch that morning, you'll get a link. It'll go to a countdown page. We take 100 people around. This will be the fourth round. Fourth round, I think, of this course. It might be the fifth. I'm not sure now. Things are blending together. All of the other ones sold out. So I don't see any reason why this one won't sell out too. This is a 40-day long course done over 8 weeks with weekends off. That way you can get caught up if you fall behind. It is not for people that want to learn how to use ChatGPT to code something or to build a lesson plan or something like that. This is for business-oriented people. And it's really geared around people that are solopreneurs or in small businesses. And we've had several people that are marketing people for small businesses. Their company paid for them to take it because I've had to create receipts for them and stuff like that so they could file it on an expense report. So it's for that kind of thing too. It is not just business marketing though. It is developing your messaging, your standard operating procedures, making your business scalable. This is what I did back in the early 2000s. This was one of the things, one of many things I was doing with companies that I was running with Neil Franklin back in the early to mid 2000s as well when I started the show, as I started it as a part-time endeavor in 2008, and I didn't go full-time with it until 2010. And to get me to come into your business back then, so over 20 years ago, and do what this course teaches you to do would have cost you a minimum of a $20,000 retainer. We sell the course for like $300. And the beauty is that once you're in to one of these courses, you also, at the end of your course, you get added to an alumni group. So now you're in a network with many other community-based entrepreneurs that have all been through the training, that are all now operating at that level that you can work with. And when you're in that group, if you're like, I want to take the course again, once you're in, you can retake it as many times as you want to. You get the manual and everything so you can do it on your own, or when the next round fires up, you can just jump in and be part of it. And not only will you learn everything we teach you, the community inside these courses, I'm learning from my own students. And I say that with zero shame, because one of the many things I've said about being a good teacher is if your students are not excited to learn, you're a shitty teacher. And if your students are not teaching you back actively while you're teaching them, you are a shitty teacher. These are smart people that take these courses. These are people, most of them already have a business, not just thinking about it someday. And so they're capable, intelligent people. And a good teacher brings the best out of those people. And when you do that with people like that, they can't help but sharing what they know with others. And so I don't necessarily mean they have to teach you back directly, but just watching the interaction and people like, well, I can't get this to work. We'll try that. Holy crap. I'll tell you one thing. It's either four times. I think it's four times. I think it's the fifth time. We haven't had a single person ask for a refund. My policy is if you don't think you got your value out of it, just tell me. I'll give you your money back. We haven't won. So if you want to be able to develop your business, or you have an idea for a business, you need to put together the plan for it, this is the course for you. Where I want to be abundantly clear with this. If you just want to learn how to use AI better, this is probably not the course for you. Because we're starting right from day one with kind of building the ability to communicate a value proposition behind a product or a service. That's where we begin with it. And what we find out in week one, most people think they know what they do. They don't know what they do. And they certainly don't know what they do well enough and concise enough to explain it to somebody that doesn't know what you know so that they understand what you do and what value you bring. So if you want to be in that course, I'd really love to hear that. Now, if you just want to learn more about AI and you're anywhere near West Virginia, I have a pretty cool opportunity coming up either to be at an event and see me speak, or you don't want to come to the event, but you want to come hang out with us that evening, we can do that as well. On August 29th, I'm going to be in West Virginia for the West Virginia Home School Convention. And this is going to be a really great day-long event. It's like 9 to 5 type of event at a really beautiful, this is actually at a church, and it is a gorgeous, huge church that they have set up for events like this as well. And so it's going to be a great facility, great place to meet people, great place to network and learn about homeschooling, which, again, I think personally, homeschooling is one of the greatest forces for liberty that we have. If we don't get to decide what our children learn and how they learn it, then we don't own our own children. And I don't, own's not really the right word. We don't have sovereignty over our own families. And so, again, I want to encourage you, if you live in West Virginia, in or around Charleston, even across the border, but relatively close, short drive in, please consider coming to this event. And all the information you need is on my website. You can look it up. Again, here's the post right here on the screen. And there's a link that you can get today and get over to the website and you can find it. But support these agencies, these groups. If you're young, you don't have kids yet, you want this fight fought harder so that by the time you do, you might not even choose this path for yourself. You want the option. This is also like, we need to preserve homeschooling because it's one of the things that the public school actually pays attention to. They don't like it. I don't want them to like it. And I want them to feel like there's some sort of pressure because otherwise what you have is a monopoly. And that's what the state is a monopoly on violence. This is important, but I'm going to be talking about using AI as a homeschool family. And you guys know for 5 years, Dorothy and I homeschooled our grandchildren. And I learned an awful lot about homeschooling, and I learned an awful lot about AI at the same time. And we were able to bring those together in a really cool way. And I'm going to tell you this. You show up for my talk, you're going to learn about a lot about using AI. If you're an adult, you're never going to have children. You're never going to homeschool. It'll benefit you personally. Absolutely. And then I think I set the time for like 7 o'clock at night, 7 to 9. Is it 5? 6:30. So 6:30 is when it will officially begin, and I am staying at the Charleston Marriott Town Center, and we're going to be meeting up in a restaurant and bar called the Brick Salt Bar and Kitchen, and it's a pretty cool place. They look like they have a pretty cool menu and a pretty cool setup, and would love to see you there. So we'll be there till about from 6:30 till about 9 o'clock. Maybe 9:30 is about as late as I'll stay up. I got to get on an airplane and get back here the next morning. So, you know, I'm going to have to be getting up early. So, and then I'm going to say again, one more time about this trip. And whenever I travel, I always get the emails. Can you come see my place? Can I buy you dinner? Whatever, man, I appreciate it. I am literally flying in Friday and I'm not getting there till the evening, and I'm going to my hotel and I'm going to bed. These people are paying me to come do this. I'm not going to be up drinking the night before I do a keynote. That's not professional. I am going to the place that morning. You know, again, it opens at 9 a.m. I'm doing the keynote, so that's going to be early. So first thing kind of type of thing. I'm also sitting on a panel. I'm going to be there pretty much all day. I'm coming back to my hotel and taking an hour to myself to take a shower and chill. And then I'm going to come do that meetup, and then I'm coming home. There is no time for any invitations or anything like that. I am offering you an invitation to come meet with me, hang out with me and other people from the community, because that's what I can do with this quick of a turnaround time. Since Dorothy's not traveling, it's literally a straight in and out business trip. Okay. All right. So with that, I think we're about ready to wrap things up. I don't really have an item of the day for you today because I already kind of bolted two of them into the show for you. But again, they were the dome covers for you flat. If you have a flat top griddle and you don't have those things, get them and just start playing around with some of the cool things we talked about today. And the Vavor chamber vac machine. The next time you curse at your food saver, just order one of those, or do it now. You won't have to anymore, because again, the bags will pay for the machine in a year or two. And you'll have a better experience all the way. And there's so many things you can do with it, like we talked about today, you normally can't. But remember this, no matter what, if you start your online shopping at tspaz.com, if you're shopping on Vavor, you can get the code and get my discount. You're shopping on Amazon, you just go to Amazon from there. But you will be supporting me and my show and the work that we do. And it won't cost you anything extra to do that. And last but not least, do consider picking up a copy of my books. Laws of Life, Book 1 and 2. They're doing very well still on Amazon, still in the top 100 in their categories. That's pretty impressive this long after a launch. So check them out. Again, Laws of Life, Book 1 and Laws of Life, Book 2. Laws of Life, Book 1, you want the second edition. So when you go to look for that, make sure if you're buying the soft jacket, especially, you pay attention to what it says on the pages on Amazon for those books. I'm also going to be bringing, I think, 25 sets of the hardcovers to West Virginia that I think I'm going to be selling for 20. I got to look at what I actually have to pay for them, but I think I'm going to actually discount them and sell them at like $20 a piece, of $40 a set, hand autographed at the time that you get them from me. And I'm only going to send like 25 sets, like $50 up there, in case people don't buy them, and then I have to haul them back down here to Texas or what have you. All right. So, oh, Mick says also on my item of the day, you can find these on my website as well. The O-lights are still on sale for $71. That is a hell of a deal on that light. That is my go-to EDC light. I do have a few questions. I'm going to answer them now. Before I answer them, I'm going to pop them up on the screen real quick here. If you've asked a question, you should watch. If you don't see your question pop up, then that means I didn't see it with my one eye today. And you have last call to get questions up. So let's start off here. Big Hammer Company 4915. Comment, this made me remember the Electric Canter podcast you did years ago. Going to re-listen to them. Yeah, that was pretty cool. Carrie was the Electric Canter that I recommended. I still do. It's a great system, electric canning, and there's more and more of them coming out. And a lot of people think electric canners are dangerous or you're going to die and get botulism or something. Heat is heat, pressure is pressure, steam is steam. In fact, I would say there's less margin of error when you're using a proper electric pressure canner. But it has to be that is the purpose of that tool. If it doesn't explicitly say that's what it is, then it's a pressure cooker, and you should treat it as such. It's not for doing pressure canning. Robin says, I have my ticket for the homeschool event. Robin, I'm glad you're coming. I am looking forward to meeting you. I've seen you online for years now, so that's very, very cool. Three Tracks in Snow says, how's that Sailor MicroStrategy thesis holding up? Keep holding, folks. They need your exit liquidity. This person doesn't know what they're talking about. So this is a person that's upset with Michael Saylor, probably calls him a suit coiner or whatever, because he built finance products on top of Bitcoin. Michael Saylor Strategy just put out a statement, and they have the ability to pay dividends on those products in cash on hand for 3 years. Right now, if you're betting against Strategy, okay, if you're betting against them, you're betting against Bitcoin. So when he's like, they need you for liquidity, they don't need you for liquidity. They don't need you for liquidity. I should probably, you know what I might do? I might do my segment for the expert show Thursday on why would you buy a product like Strike? Who is that? It's not for me. I don't need it. I don't want it. Not yet. Who is that for? When would it make sense to do that versus just buy Bitcoin? And there's an absolute perfect answer to that. So I guess I probably saw him and went ahead and starred that just because there's so much misunderstanding around what's going on there. When you have an asset that you know accrues a certain interest across time, there's a lot of way you can play financing leverage there. And again, when you look at the math, when you actually look at the pressure testing on the back end of it, if you don't think Strategy is going to make it, if you don't think Strike is going to make it or any of the other derivatives, then you're saying Bitcoin's not going to make it. And how you think a person selling their Bitcoin contributes to their liquidity, I'd love to hear that someday, because that just shows a disconnect. You probably supported BIP 110.2 and thought a node was going to change the network, and now you're mad about something else. That was the other thing about the whole BIP thing, right? Like, all these grievances got tossed into this thing about filtering spam. Like, somehow shutting down OP Return to where it was a year ago was going to get rid of Michael Saylor, even though he's been here since 2019. People are delusional. And it's going to speed up monetary adoption. Well, why didn't it happen by 2023 then? Like, it was just like all the things they're not happy about, all the anger and angst went into this one. Why am I not a billionaire yet? Right? Like, it's craziness. So anyway, I figured that was worth commenting on. Question, would the course be worthwhile for someone without a business? I kind of answered that, right? It's for people that will at least want a business. So I would tell you, hanging laundry, the AI course, if you at least have an idea of the business you want and you are serious about building a business, it's like, I would like my business to be about X, Y, and Z, and I'm ready to put a plan together so I can implement a business. Yes. If you have no interest in entrepreneurship, it will not be a course you will be happy if you took. I don't want anybody ever giving me money for something because they misunderstood what I was offering. So I've tried to be very clear about that. And Rachel says, if you're going to vacuum seal frozen sous vide, do you use the sous vide bags or the chamber vacuum bags? Chamber vacuum bags are food grade that are fine to use for sous vide. So I guess Rachel may be talking about like the silicone ones or whatever. You wouldn't seal those with a vacuum sealing bag. They have a different way that they work. But if there's some other bag you're talking about, I don't know. Pretty much almost any plastic bag will work in a chamber vacuum machine. I mean, literally, like, we have had to put some stuff away and cut Ziploc bags in half, right? And zip-tied one side of them and then chamber vac stuff in those, right? Like, that's not what I would do long-term because they're not as thick, but pretty much they'll work with just about anything. I use, like, my minimum thickness when I buy those bags is 3 mil. And like the really super or whatever it is, there's like 3, 5, 1, whatever. The really super thick ones is what I buy for really long-term large things with that. But I just use those. And again, once those are done and in the freezer, they come straight out of the freezer, straight, you can throw them in. Now, I'm not saying you can't defrost them. There's any advantage to throwing them in there frozen. I'm just saying that you can, and it only has about 15 minutes of cooking because that circulating water defrost things super fast. I use sous vide for defrosting all the time, even if I'm not cooking sous vide. I'll set it to the lowest setting and just put on circulate. And like you throw two, they got to be vacuum sealed, right? But like two steaks in there that would take like 3-4 hours to defrost, and they're defrosted in 15 minutes. So that's what I'm talking about there. Let's see if I got any more before I close down. Question from Underground Fifly. What's your thoughts on Wi-Fi and DO Bank, 10 words or less? I don't know what those things are. I have no idea what that is. Wi-Fi, is that like some kind of like loan company or something? And DO Bank. So these sound like small loaning companies. But if you tell me what they are in the next 5 minutes, next 2 minutes, maybe I'll get you an answer. But if there are places that you can borrow against your Bitcoin, my big thing is look at the interest rates very cautiously. Probably the best place to do that right now is Strike. And it's still, in my opinion, way too high a rate. I'm not putting down Jack Mahler's or Strike as a company. You can only fund loans with money that people are willing to give you to fund loans with that have a required ROI, right? So the fact that I can put my money into something like Strike right now, a Strike, the stock, not the company, and get 10% on it, why would I loan it to you for 6? You see what I mean? But yeah, I really don't know what he's asking about. So crypto and non-normal bank. I don't do crypto, dude. For all the Bitcoin talk, I do Bitcoin. I don't do crypto. I don't do shit coins. I don't go down that. I did it years and years ago, and I kind of woke up to reality eventually. There can only be one best. And I don't get involved in any of the shitcoin casinos and DeFi and all that other shit. And my advice on that is just don't. The problem people have with how to build wealth with Bitcoin, and I'm going to end with this, is it's too simple and people feel they need to be doing something. So this is how you get wealthy over time with Bitcoin. Buy Bitcoin every day. I don't care if it's a dollar. I suggest more. I don't care what it is. Buy it every day. Buy it every day. Buy it every day. Set a minimum buy. Throw some money in Strike or River or whatever instead of a daily buy. So I know some of you guys do hourly buys, right? I do a daily buy, my absolute bare minimum that I buy a day, and I have quite a bit already, right? You might need to go higher depending on what your timelines are. I buy a minimum $10 a day in Bitcoin. Minimum. Daily. Like, that is just an auto setup thing, and that's been going on for years now. And then when certain things happen, I'll throw more money in, I'll increase it. Or when we do like a big sale and I get a windfall of cash, I'll say like, I'm going to throw another 3,000 in, but I'll do that 3,000 over 30 days, like $100 a day or something like that, right? I'm a big believer in that dollar cost averaging, watching it grow, seeing the value in it, then you don't want to sell it. Then you fought and bled for it. And one of the things I can say for Bitcoin, and I think it's done as much by being a high return asset over time as it has by being a hard money and changing people's minds towards savings. There's a big portion of the Bitcoin community that they, what they really want is you to spend your Bitcoin. This country does not have a saving problem. We have a spending problem, and it's not just our government. It's not just the government. Our country has a spending problem. Poor people spend more money than they should. Rich people spend more money than they should. Middle class spend more money than they should. You have people talking about how everything's unaffordable and they're ordering DoorDash once a week. I'm sorry. We do not have a problem with too many people not spending all their money. I don't care what form it's in. And of course, I'm going to spend with some Bitcoin maxis called cuckbucks, USD, before I spend Bitcoin. And the more you stack over time, and the more you see the return of your investment, the more greedy you get with not spending what you're investing on your future with. Remember this, folks. I don't care if you do it in dollars. I don't care if you do it with stocks and equities. I don't care if you do it with real estate. I don't care what you build your wealth with. Bitcoin, gold, silver, it doesn't matter. This is the same thing. Every trade you make is not between you and the person you bought the thing from. There's a third party in there. And it's not some broker or some shit. I don't mean it that way. It is you. You're trading with yourself in the future. Every trade is a trade with future you. In my second book, right? Book two, Now Build a System for Your Life, Laws of Life, right? I talk about how if you looked at it purely from an ROI on a basic return, if you, when you're 22 years old, go out to a rock concert and spend $300 that weekend, you know, the tickets, the bar, everything, 65-year-old, you paid $56,000 for it. This isn't about saving money because I told you to, right? So the simple solution with Bitcoin, be buying frequently, weekly dollar cost average, monthly, whatever you want. I like daily. And I say, whatever your number is monthly, just divide it by 30. It's the same thing. It just feels different. Trust me. And you're hitting a lot more volatility pickups that way. Mine goes off 3:30 in the morning. Why? Hey, there is a little bit of game theory in that with pricing in the international markets, but I mean, it's $10 buys, something like right now it's $20 buys. Yeah, but the big thing is get up and I go take a dump in the morning, right? After I turn the coffee maker on and I go, oh, look, I have more sats. I already did the thing. The thing is, end every day with more than you started. That's it. And this is where people get in trouble with all of the stuff with Bitcoin and crypto and everything else. Doing nothing but stacking is the way to wealth. And that's why all your influencers are always coming up with all this other bullshit that you need to know about Bitcoin. I even did a Bitcoin breakout show. I did like 30 episodes. I think that's pretty much what you need to know or want to know. Like, our news going on, we'll cover it. But like, buy it, hold it, do nothing. It's so simple that it's hard. But those who will stay the course will reap the reward. And all I'll say to anybody still holding out on this, if you had started doing it when I told you to start doing it, there's no way that any single person in this audience at any income level across the board, if you go back to when I said to start, you wouldn't have a net worth over $1 million right now. Not one. Now, am I going to tell you it's going to happen in the next 5 years for you with these smaller buys? No. But I'm going to tell you, you won't regret it. I'm going to tell you that. With that, I hope you guys enjoyed today's show. Thanks for tuning in. Have a great day. I will be back tomorrow. We have an interview tomorrow. Who are we talking to? Dalton Bradshaw. Oh, this guy's cool. I found this guy. This is one of the few guys I've ever reached out to and actually said, hey, come on the show. Dalton runs a company called New Candle Cottages. These are off-frame modular homes, so they are not like trailer types, right? Like, not your typical modular home. These are, some people on his channel call them sheds or whatever. They're really nice. And, you know, you get into like a two-bedroom model for like $60,000. You got to have your own land and whatever. But he's helped a lot of people. And this is just another alternative for people trying to get onto some land and have a livable structure and things like that as well. And if you live outside of his delivery area and range, it won't matter because what you learn from him, there's other companies that do this. So I really like this guy's video work, including him. If you've seen him, you'll know what I'm talking about, firing his cameraman, literally fired his cameraman on camera because the guy did this all the time with the camera all over the place. So I'm going to have him on tomorrow. We'll be talking about that. And, of course, Thursday will be the next panel Q&A. Take care, guys. Just thanks for tuning in.
Run you round. They said you should have a house the American way. Dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.